This is VOA News. I'm Alexis Strope. U.S. President Joe Biden is weighing responses to the death of three U.S. service members in Jordan Sunday in a drone strike the White House attributed to Iranian-backed militias. The attack has many U.S. lawmakers concerned about increasing U.S. military involvement in the Middle East following the October 7th Hamas attack on Israel. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
On Capitol Hill, some Democratic senators are concerned a U.S. response could rapidly escalate a military conflict before lawmakers have a chance to authorize war.
This is an escalating war in the Middle East. The U.S. is getting drawn more and more into it. There's no congressional authorization for the U.S. participation in another war in the Middle East, so the time is probably now right for Congress to begin that discussion.
But lawmakers also recognize the need for a strong U.S. response.
Anyone who attacks the troops and puts Americans in harm's way when we do everything we can to defend them.
Earlier this week, top Senate Republican Mitch McConnell said the Biden administration's policies had increased the threat posed by Iran. And other Republican lawmakers said Thursday any response should be carefully calibrated.
I'd like to know the president has a plan to not just stop this, but to put Iran in a position they will never do this again.
Catherine Gibson, VOA News.
Ukraine is claiming it used sea drones to sink a Russian warship in the Black Sea during a nighttime attack. Ukraine's military intelligence agency published a video it says shows naval drones assaulting the Russian missile-armed corvette Ivanovets on Wednesday night, apparently sinking it. Meanwhile, Russian investigators allege a Russian military transport plane that crashed last month was brought down by two U.S.-made Patriot missiles fired by Kyiv's forces. You'll find expanded coverage of world news and events 24 hours a day at voanews.com. This is VOA News. The bodies of nine Pakistani nationals killed by gunmen in Iran last week were repatriated to their home country on Thursday. VOA's Rick Pantaleo tells us more.
Recently, unknown gunmen shot to death nine people in the southeastern part of Iran that borders Pakistan. Mohammad Wasim, the uncle of one of the nine killed, was on hand when the bodies were returned to Pakistan. Today, after 6 days, we received the bodies of our loved ones who were martyred by terrorists in Iran. According to a local official, Tehran handed over the bodies of the slain men at the Tuftan border crossing. The bodies were being flown to the city of Malton and then will be sent from there to their hometowns. Rick Pantaleo, VOA News.
British Foreign Secretary David Cameron has told the Associated Press that his country could officially recognize a Palestinian state after a ceasefire in Gaza without waiting for the outcome of what could be years-long negotiations between Israeli and the Palestinians on a two-state solution. Cameron said during a visit to Lebanon on Thursday that no recognition could come while Hamas remained in Gaza, but that it could take place while Israeli negotiations with Palestinian leaders were continuing. Cameron said that UK recognition of an independent state of Palestine, including in the United Nations, quote, can't come at the start of the process, but it doesn't have to be the very end of the process. 10 Oregon Republican senators who staged a long walkout won't be able to run for re-election, according to a higher court. AP correspondent Haya Panjwani reports.
The state Supreme Court said that the GOP senators who walked out to stall the legislature last year can't run for office again. They were attempting to stall bills on abortion, transgender health care, and gun rights. The court's decision upholds the Secretary of State's call to disqualify the senators from the ballot under a 2022 measure trying to stop boycotts like this, where a lawmaker can be barred from re-election if they have more than 10 unexcused absences. Five of the 10 lawmakers sued over the Secretary of State's decision. Senators Tim Knopp, Daniel Bonham, Suzanne Weber, Dennis Lindegum, and Lynn Finley. The boycott lasted 6 weeks, the longest in the state's history, and stalled hundreds of bills. I'm Haya Panjwani.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has reiterated his focus on strengthening his naval forces as he inspected the construction of new warships. State media said Friday that Kim called such projects crucial to the country's war preparations as he visited an eastern shipyard. Kim in recent months has been emphasizing his goals of building a nuclear-armed navy to counter what he portrays as growing external threats posed by the United States, South Korea, and Japan. Those nations have stepped up their military cooperation to cope with Kim's nuclear weapons and missile program. For additional stories 24 hours a day, visit voanews.com. I'm Alexis Strope, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, February 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN condemns summary executions by Malian and foreign soldiers.
This seems to be a trend where the military in this part of Mali, together with their foreign military allies, round up young people, detain them, and execute them summarily without reason.
SADC health ministers do not want to declare cholera a public health emergency in their countries. 8 Zambian opposition political parties have agreed to form an alliance. We'll get reaction from President Hichilema's spokesperson. Liberian security services probe an alleged attack on President Joseph Boakai.
What I can further confirm is that there is an active investigation ongoing. The police have investigated and continue to investigate persons of interest around the incident.
And the Pentagon hints at a stronger response against Iranian proxies. Those stories, plus our Black History Month facts, and Samson O'Malley's post at the African Cup of Nations in Ivory Coast are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk, condemns report that Malian and foreign soldiers may have summarily executed at least 25 people in Welingara village in the central Nara region on January 26. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In addition to reports that soldiers killed at least 25 people in Welingara last week, the UN rights chief is alarmed by reports of civilian massacres in two other villages, Ogota and Oimbi, in the Bundiagara region over the weekend. Unidentified gunmen reportedly attacked and killed about 30 civilians. Saif Magano is the UN human rights spokesperson. He tells VOA by phone from Nairobi that similar atrocities have taken place in recent months. He says his office has confirmed two deadly attacks in September and October. On those occasions, he says, members of the Malian armed forces and allied foreign military personnel allegedly executed at least 31 civilians.
So this seems to be a trend where the military in this part of Mali, together with their foreign military allies, round up young people, detain them, and execute them summarily without reason. There's no telling why they do that, and that's why the High Commissioner is appalled by this and wants it to end and for it to be investigated.
Magano says the High Commissioner wants the perpetrators to be held to account. Since UN peacekeeping troops withdrew from Mali last year, he says it has been difficult for his office to monitor, document, verify, and evaluate conditions in the country. And he says the withdrawal of the UN troops has not improved things in Mali. On the contrary, Magano says human rights violations continue to be rampant and are likely to have escalated. He says his office has been in touch with Mali authorities about the alleged massacres and the need for a transparent investigation into the killings.
When we speak to them, they tell us that they are committed to upholding their international human rights obligations. But as they say, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. We need to see an improvement on the ground.
Magano says the killings, violations, and arbitrary detentions must stop, especially those in which the authorities appear to be complicit. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Liberia, security services are jointly probing an alleged assault on President Joseph Boakai as he attended a university graduation. Denise Nipson reports from Monrovia.
The country went into a panic mode Tuesday afternoon when a live video showed the hand of a man who approached the president from behind and put his arm around him, touching his chest before being pulled away by security. Boakai at the time was in a crowd and speaking with faculty members at the graduation ceremony of the United Methodist University. The incident has sparked a debate among Liberians within and outside of the country among those wanting to know the identity of the person and his intentions. Presidential Press Secretary Kula Fofana did not tell VOA if the police apprehended the alleged perpetrator, but she confirmed the incident and said that John's security is investigating persons of interest.
What I can further confirm is that there is an active investigation ongoing. The police have investigated and continue to investigate persons of interest around the incident. That is as far as the information I can provide. At the appropriate times, all of the information from our investigative team, that is comprising of both the Executive Protection Service as well as the Liberian National Police, so there's an active joint security, and upon the conclusion of that investigation, we'll provide you all with these facts as we have them.
A Liberian youth, Ernest Mwabai, told VOA he blames presidential security for breach.
I must express my deepest regret in the security that gives protection to our president. There was a huge vulnerability from the security towards our president. But quickly to mention, the action by one of the citizens to have touched the president for me in my mind, I do not see it as a wrong thing, especially in the time of us just leaving campaign. Everybody stay in their campaign moves, want to see the president at that type of function.
Meanwhile, the governor of the Central Bank of Liberia appeared before the House of Representatives on Thursday following a report from President Boakai that former President George Weah was not accurate when he said his administration left $40 million United States dollars in the Treasury. In his State of the Nation speech on January 29, President Boakai said the actual amount is United States dollar $20.5 million, but the bank governor's report showed that separate balances from both United States dollar and Liberian dollars as of December 31, 2023 and January 19, 2024 is equivalent to the amount the former president said he left there. Liberians are wondering who is telling the truth. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nefsi in Monrovia, Liberia.
Southern African Development Community's SADC health ministers have refused to accept a proposal by the Africa Centers for Disease Control to declare cholera a public health emergency in SADC member countries. This, as cholera has affected nearly 15 member states, according to the Lusaka Times. Kumbize Kandodo Chiponda is Minister of Health, is that Malawi's Minister of Health. She tells me that the Africa CDC needs to develop guidelines because cholera's impact varies from country to country.
Basically, what we say is that when you want to declare a public health emergency, there are guidelines which we follow. At the moment, we use World Health Organization guidelines in terms of any disease or condition to declare whether it's a national health public emergency. We follow the guidelines. The guidelines, they give you indicators. You look at the case fatality rate, you look at the admissions, the number of positive cases. So basically, on this issue, what we're saying is that Africa CDC, they need to develop guidelines for us to follow. Because if you take the course of cholera, the countries within the SADC region, we are at different levels. We're looking at the number of cases being found active on a daily basis. We're looking at the number of admissions in our hospital, but we're also looking at the number of case fatality, those who are dying to the same. Zambia is different. Mozambique is different. So you cannot apply a wholesome situation to the nations. So Africa CDC, they agreed. They're saying they're going to work on the protocols, which has to be followed by the member states.
So if I understand, Madam, from the viewpoint of your country and the other countries, is it something bad if the Africa CDC declares cholera emergency? Is that something bad or good?
It's not bad, but it has implications. If you declare as a block, what exactly is it that we're saying? On what statistics are we basing that declaration? Because it has to be evidence-based.
So while cholera may be more in one country, that may not be the same for other countries.
Yes, but you have to understand that it might not be the same, but we are aware of the risk is very high for both countries, regardless of whether Malawi have only one case and Zambia, considering the porous nature of our borders. Cholera is a mobile disease. We have people going in and out. So what we have done, we are on high alert. We have increased our surveillance. We have increased the case identification in the communities. We have increased the risk assessment and community engagement. Basically, I think the most important thing is that we are not saying no, but we are saying let's put proper guidelines with evidence. What are we going to look at before we declare?
Kumbize Kandodo Chimponda is Malawi's health minister. She was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, February 2nd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports and our Black History Month Fact of the Day. In Zambia, 8 opposition political parties have agreed to form an alliance to challenge President Hakainde Hichilema in the next election. The 8 include the former ruling Patriotic Front Party. Meanwhile, the French news agency AFP earlier this week said former President Edgar Lungu called on Zambians to demand an early election because he said President Hichilema has mismanaged the economy. Information Minister Cornelius Mwitua tells me Zambians are not interested in any call for an early election because it is an attempt to sow a sea of discords.
First of all, I want to place on record that former President Edgar Chagwa Lungu was simply politicking. Zambia is a stable democracy with a clear record of democratic elections at appointed intervals as by the law established. The only time we had early elections was in 1991 when we were transitioning from one-party states to multi-party democracy. After that, we always have at regular intervals of five-year term elections that have gone peacefully and with peaceful handover of power from one political party, one leader to the other. That is what Zambia is known for. So to call for early elections is an act that is meant to plant a seed of discord, which the people of Zambia are not interested in. President Edgar Chagwa Lungu, former president of the Republic of Zambia, will go in history as one who was resoundingly rejected by the people of this country by more than 1 million vote difference given our population. It is a huge difference. And so these calls are not backed by any group of well-meaning citizens. No, he is on his own.
Let me say, the former president calling for these early elections is saying that your government has mismanaged the economy. You talk about debt restructuring that has failed, the devaluation of the kwacha, the high cost of mealie meal.
Well, first of all, he is giving half-truths. He is supposed to start by saying the economy right now is in the state it is because of where he left it. In fact, decency would have demanded that he should have been thanking the current government for moving the economy from negative 2% GDP growth rate, where we picked it up in August of 2021, to more than 2-3% GDP growth rate, meaning we have moved about 4-5 percentage points in the positive.
Minister Mwitwa, what do you make also of this 8 opposition political parties coming together in an alliance to challenge the ruling party in the next election?
It is not an alliance of opposition leaders. It is an alliance of individuals because they are not an opposition, so to speak, because out of all of them who, you know, met and sat together, only Patriotic Front has got representation at local government level and in the National Assembly of Zambia or Parliament. The rest are individual political parties without any form of configuration of representation at any level of government or governance whatsoever.
Cornelius Mwitwa is Zambia's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. U.S. forces are preparing to hit Iranian-backed proxies across the Middle East with increased intensity in response to a drone attack that killed 3 U.S. soldiers and injured more than 40 others. VOA national security correspondent Jeff Selden has the latest from the Pentagon.
U.S. forces have yet to respond to the attack on the Tower 22 base in northeastern Jordan that hit troops as they slept. But U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says the response is coming and that it will be felt.
It's time to take away even more capability than we've taken in the past.
Speaking to reporters for the first time since he returned to work after complications from prostate cancer surgery, Austin promised a multi-tiered response and seemed to dismiss talk from some of the militias that they're done attacking U.S. forces.
We always listen to what people are saying, but we watch what they do. And again, actions are everything.
Austin also dismissed concerns from some critics that the Pentagon is telegraphing its moves, giving the Iranian proxy forces time to hide.
They have a lot of capability. I have a lot more. As I said earlier, we're going to do what's necessary to protect our troops and our interests.
Iranian-backed militias in Iraq and Syria have carried out at least 166 attacks on U.S. forces since mid-October. The militias say they're acting in solidarity with Palestinians, pointing to the nearly four-month-long war between Israel and Hamas militants in Gaza, sparked by the Hamas terror attack on Israel October 7th. The U.S. Defense Secretary also promised to keep up the pressure on Houthi militants in Yemen, who have likewise pointed to Gaza as the reason for launching some 40 attacks on international shipping in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden.
Our goal is to make sure that we continue to take away capability from the Houthis to do what they've been doing.
Lloyd Austin called the Houthi attacks irresponsible and illegal. The U.S. designated the Houthis as a terror group last month. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
Women blocked access to Central Conakry on Thursday before being joined by other demonstrators in a spontaneous and rare protest in junta-led Guinea, according to the French news agency, the AFP. Small groups of women set up roadblocks early using stones and whatever they could find as traffic into the city center built up. The protest kicked off in a neighborhood which was one of the worst hit by a huge fire in Guinea's main fuel depot in December. February is Black History or African American History Month celebration here in the United States. Each morning during the month of February, Daybreak Africa will profile African Americans and events. Now, here are our African-American and African history facts for today, February 2nd. On this day, 1897, 30-year-old Alfred L. Crowley of Cambridge, Virginia, was granted a U.S. patent for his invention of the ice cream scooper. Also on this day, 1936, Babe Ruth was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. He was a famous Major League Baseball player for the Boston Red Sox from 1914 to 1919 and later for the New York Yankees from 1920 to 1934. He also played for the Boston Braves, now the Atlanta Braves, during his last year as a player in 1935. Ruth had achieved much during his career. For instance, he ranked third on the all-time home run list. He achieved a record of 64 home runs in 1927 and was the only player to hit 3 home runs in 2 World Series appearances, 1926 and 1928. On this day in African history, 1990, President F.W. de Klerk of South Africa lifted the 30-year ban on the African National Congress, the leading anti-apartheid group at the time. De Klerk also stated that jailed ANC leader Nelson Mandela would be released. Those are your Black History Month facts for today, February 2nd. It is time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Samson Omale in Abidjan, Ivory Coast, at the Africa Cup of Nations. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire, where the quarterfinals of the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations will get underway on Friday. Nigeria will take on an unpredictable Angolan side as the Super Eagles of Nigeria beat to reach the last four for the first time since 2019. The clash at the Felix Ofori-Ibueni Stadium in Abidjan is the opening fixture of the AFCON last eight. Coach Jose Pesero at the press conference on Thursday said he's very much aware of the challenge the Angolan side will pose for his players.
They show the quality and capacity. Angola is not a big name in Africa, like a national team. Didn't win AFCON, but it's a one-on-one point. It's a that well in the moment. Angola show good quality, good capacity. They score 9 goals until now. They reached the first position in the group. I think we must understand that it's good for Africa competitions.
Meanwhile, Angola will be full of confidence after surprisingly topping Group D unbeaten, and this is their first quarterfinals since hosting the 2010 tournament, led by star striker Gilson Dala, who netted twice against Namibia. Angola have one of the most potent attacks at the 2023 AFCON. That is why their coach Pedro Goncalves has called on his players to embrace the opportunity of a career when they take on Nigeria for a place in the semi-finals.
First of all, we respect Nigeria for all that they made till now in African football. Actually, Nigeria is really a powerful team. Have players playing in big nations of football, beginning to 5-6 players from lineup playing in Premier League, but they also have some issues where we are looking for to create difficult.
Also on Friday, Guinea and DR Congo will clash at the Alassane Ouattara Stadium in Ebimpe. It will be the fourth CAF AFCON encounter between the two nations, with DR Congo yet to beat Guinea in their three previous group stage meetings, including a 2-1 loss in their last meeting in 2004. Staying with the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations, the International Sport Press Association has condemned what it called some journalists' deplorable behavior at the Africa Cup of Nations after several incidents, including fighting and celebrating in the stands. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, February 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows. Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.